You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
The year is 3129. Mankind is adrift in the stars. Giant spaceships hurtle the last of humanity towards their destiny, whatever it may be. Only one thing can keep them going and power these great ships, will feed the minds and spirits of these people. And that is the last brewing company to survive in the future, Circle Brewing. So great was their product that they indeed became the legendary Earth Brewers. But, you know, it's right now, 2018, or maybe 2019, depending on when you're listening to this. And you can get Circle Brewing right by going into Austin, by stopping into their brewery on Breaker Lane. Or you can get it in convenience stores where there's all sorts of good stuff. Martin, you're from the future. What do you think?
Well, I tell you, Austin is a city with no shortage of breweries, but this is some of the best I've ever had.
Well, there you go. You can't ask somebody who's going to give you a truer thing about beer than Mr. Martin Thomas, because he's an alcoholic.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Screener Squad. Today, we're showing our wonderful review of this exquisite period piece movie, The Chaperone. I am Justin Zarian, Esquire, and over here we have Bradford Martin III. How are you doing, my good sir?
Very good, and a good day to you all, and hopefully a good morrow.
Ugh. Yes, this movie is that dry, everybody. Oh, jeez. So, this is funny because this is written by the guy who did Downton Abbey, so that's already a warning for you guys. Like, you know, Downton Abbey, Gosford Park, all those kind of things. If you know you don't like this kind of stuff, you're probably not going to like this movie. Just right up front.
But do you watch Downton Abbey?
I watched the first season and I really liked it a lot. And then by the second season, I'm like, oh, now it's just kind of becoming a soap opera. I'm kind of losing interest.
Like it kind of flandernized itself. I stayed in until the Matthew arc was complete, so...
Well, that's the thing. Like, literally everybody I know is just like, yeah, once Dan Stevens left, there was no reason to watch the show.
Oh, well, there you go. I thought I was the only one.
Oh, no. Even when Honest Trailers makes a joke about that, you know it's true.
So. I have to watch that now.
Yeah. But that's the thing where this movie here, it's written by Julian Fellowes, but it's directed by a guy named Michael Engler, who seems to be pretty much, you know, he's worked on Downton Abbey and Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt and a whole bunch of TV shows for the most part, it seems like. And this is a very clearly made for PBS movie. I don't know.
No, I agree with you. It's very much educational. And the
scandalous. Oh no, I don't even mean like educational in the sense like it's made it's clearly made on a very small budget and made for a very like, you know, like the people who watch free television and those like old masterpiece theater movies and that kind of such.
Well, it's not free. It's made because of people supporting it like you.
like me, because you're over in Canada. You didn't help fund this movie.
No, I would never.
So, okay, all this said and done, what is this movie about? Not a whole lot, actually. Okay, I'll stop being jokey and I'll try to actually say the plot.
I could do the plot if you'd like.
You know what? Yeah, fine, you go ahead. What
I'm pretty
is this
good
movie
at
about?
making these very quick. All right. So, Louise Brooks is an incredible dancer and also a kind of rambunctious teenager with well-to-do parents who want her best interests to be kept at their best. So she is her best self. And she has this grand opportunity in the great state of New York where dreams come true. But she can't go there without a chaperone. Enter the chaperone.
That's, I thought he was going further with that. But yeah, so this is based on this is a story that centers on Louise Brooks. Now, if anyone's familiar with that name, Louise Brooks was an incredibly influential figure back in the 1920s. I mean, she pretty much brought about the flapper look, you know, with the short hair and the clothing styles. That very radical 1920s look was really built upon her and others like her kind of thing. And so this is a very fictionalized version of how she moved up to New York to become a dancer and eventually pursued an acting career later on. So Louise Brooks is being played by Haley Lou Richardson, who's a, you know, very new up-and-coming actress kind of thing. And the chaperone here is being played by Elizabeth McGovern. Look, more Downton Abbey stuff here.
Yeah, she's one of the stars, right? She was the mother of the children, Mary's mom.
Yeah, yeah, she's the main mom of the family. And so, yeah, they travel to New York. They, you know, Elizabeth McGovern is dealing with a bunch of stuff from her past, dealing with her husband and her raising in the orphanage that she finds in New York. And, okay, let me just not try to dance around this too much. This movie bored me senseless.
Now, I want to ask you, like, the whole synopsis I gave, I think that was more about Louise Brooks than the actual film was.
No, that's the thing that's so odd about this movie, is that this movie has no idea where it's going. There's no central focus. There's no direct character that you're supposed to attach to. Because you think, oh, Louise Brooks has this fascinating lifestyle. She had this, you know, ups and downs with her stardom. She had this, you know, terrible history about sexual abuse in her past and all this stuff. And the movie barely touches on that at all until like the last 20 minutes of the movie. Everything else up to that point, whenever they show Louise Brooks, it's either her being kind of a, you know, kind of a a-hole to Elizabeth McGovern's character, or just showing scenes of her dancing with no context or no plot whatsoever happening there. You know? You think, like, for someone who's so famous that they would actually have stuff for her to do in the movie, right?
Well, it's always jarring when they have actual dancers with the actress. I'm not saying Haley Lou Richardson can't dance, but she's definitely not someone who has dedicated her entire life to dance.
Yeah.
And the people dancing around her clearly have, so it's a little awkward.
Yeah, just a bit. But, I mean, that's also saying that I think Haley Lou Richardson is trying her best, because she's actually not that bad in the movie. You know,
I think she's fine. Yeah. She does a great job.
And it feels like the same problem that was happening with Elizabeth McGovern's character, because this is based on a book, based on what I've researched about this. And the problem is that a lot of the stuff that happens with Louise Brooks in this movie has been cut out from the book, and a lot of the other interesting plot details.
I see.
So they focus more on Elizabeth McGovern's character, and honestly, there ain't jack going on with her except for like one plot point that they barely touch upon every now and then.
Well, I think there's a lot there that can be unpacked, but the unpacking isn't something that ever occurs. Like, I was really enjoying the performance by Elizabeth McGovern. I think she has a beautiful way of showing, she kind of has like a poker face. Like, Louise early on is, and Louise is a riot, but I'll get into that later. But Louise asks her, so are you happy? She's like, yes, of course I'm happy. And you believe her, but you kind of don't. What's the word I'm looking for there?
Well, I mean, she's clearly
brilliant at that.
Yeah, she's projecting an attitude of being more content than she actually is with her life. Because there's a point when they reveal why she's actually putting up a poker face. And when I saw that, I'm like, oh, dang. Wow. Where's this going? And not much else happens after that.
Well, yeah, and you're right. They're like, whoa, here comes the bomb drop. Where's this going to go now? And the film's kind of like, oh, you know, wherever it goes, it will go.
Yeah.
Well, stiff upper lip, audience. You got to keep a stiff upper lip when you watch PBS.
Yeah, because the only other person they really introduced that makes a significant part of the story is a new character they bring in, played by Geza Rohrig. Now, for people who don't know who that is, he's the main character from that movie Son of Saul that came out and won Best Foreign Language Film a few years ago, which, you know, I the instant I saw him, I'm like, oh, those eyebrows, that's totally Geza Rohrig. I know exactly who that is, because that dude's got like one of those like Cro-Magnon like Neanderthal brows where you're just like, yeah, that's a face you can't, you know, forget, you know. And that's the thing where that feels like that could be an entirely different movie on its own, like if that had been more the focus of her story.
Yeah,
but he's not in it enough to really make much of an impression. And it's, you know, obviously, you know, English is not his first language. He's Hungarian. So that's, I'm not going to fault him for that, because he's doing his very best.
Well, of course.
You know, he's doing his best with this. But it just feels like it's just such a generic, you know, romance plot between him and Elizabeth McGovern that it could have gone way more interesting places than it ended up actually going.
And that's unfortunate, because you can see that he can act with this this woman, Elizabeth McGovern, but he doesn't really have to. He's just kind of there to be like, okay, whatever you want.
Oh, yeah.
And, no offense to the novel. I haven't read the novel, but if this character literally was just a yes man that came into her life, that's kind of dull.
It really is. I mean, that's the thing. Again, it's like there's a character in there because they show traits and discuss details about him. You're like, oh, that's really cool. If they actually bothered to explore it, it would actually be a way more interesting movie.
That's exactly.
Yeah, and it feels like there's a lot of wasted potential in here. I mean, Miranda Otto's in this movie as the dance instructor. I think she has 3 scenes and no character development whatsoever in any of them.
I think she was just there to be like, I'm in charge.
Yeah, and then Blythe Danner shows up for one scene, which I won't spoil the context in case you actually are interested in watching this movie, which help well, you if nice you are. But, you know, that scene is not even a badly acted scene, but by that point I had checked out so hard in the movie, I'm like, I don't even remember anything that happened to that sequence. I feel bad. I feel like I'm just being that crummy dude just saying, man, this movie was boring, but it really is freaking boring. It's like, and it's not even really well written, I feel like. You know, like, it's trying to be very, like, oh, it's old school, and it's very 1920s with its ideologies and its wording and that kind of such. And yet, it's not witty, it's not really sharp, it's not really anything that we have never seen before. You know, it's just, it just feels like Julian Fellowes was on autopilot with this movie.
Okay. There are some things that I clearly liked this a lot more than you did, but there are some things that I nitpicked about this. And that's what I like to call modern-day hindsight. And there was a lot of modern-day hindsight. I mean, you had Haley Lou Richardson's Louise Brooks making comments that, say, a freshman in high school would make in today's times. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Well, and I mean, because the whole story is revolving around, like, 1920s, you know, women's progression. You know, the idea, like, oh, women get the vote, and now they're starting to liberate themselves. They're starting to explore their sexuality more. They're starting to, you know, define themselves in this world of men. But it does feel very, like, I think this movie's talking about something else here. You know?
And they can do that. There are tons of empowered performances in the 1920s, especially during the suffrage age. But the way she just talked about it kind of seemed like how people talk about it now in retrospect.
Yeah.
You know, there's that scene in Titanic when Kate Winslet is like getting on the boat and they're like, what's that you have there? And she's like, why, it's a Picasso. A Picasso, that's not so great. And then Kate Winslet like mugs right at the camera. I think he'll be one of the greatest painters in the world. You know, and it kind of has like a lot of those scenes in it. And they're harmless. It's just a simple nitpick, really. And, you know, it kind of helps us relate to the characters, I suppose.
Yeah. No, but I agree. Like, it just... The problem also with this movie that really kind of hurt it for this movie, it's really cheap looking. Like, throughout all... Like, it feels like it's made like a TV show. Like, not even a TV show, like an episode of a TV show. You know what I mean? Like,
this I agree with that.
Because it's just... It's not... Like whenever I look at them inside of a room, it always feels like a set. You know, like, it feels like a set that they hastily decorated with 1920s, you know, props, for the most part.
Aw.
I'm not trying to be mean, but that's just how it looks. It looks fake all the time. And it doesn't help that there's some glaringly obvious technical problems that happen in this. Like, at one point, there's a flashback sequence, because that's all, like, with, like, muted palettes and such. But there was one point where they were cutting between shots that were clearly not color-corrected, where, like, it started, like... I don't know if that was the same on your video file there, but it started to, like, look like a reddish hue on it.
No, it was the same.
Okay, yeah.
I was wondering, I was probably going to bring that up later, like, what was going on with the tone?
No, that was clearly not my video file, because my video was running fine otherwise. So I'm like, yeah, this clearly was a problem where they didn't shoot the shot very well, but by that point it seemed like they must have been had it must have been too late, you know? But then there's also a part near the very end, and I'm not going to say what, but they show a shot of the street they're walking down in the middle of Wichita, and it's clearly a matte painting in the background. And I'm like, guys, if they walk any further, they're going to bump into that giant freaking matte painting in the sequence.
Would you have been disappointed if that happened?
No, that would have been much more interesting than anything else that happened in this movie. And that's also sad to say that the ending of this movie actually got more interesting. And it sucks because that was the only part where there was any tension or unique elements that happened in the story. But, I mean, I know, you said you liked it more than me. So, like, specifically, what did you like more about this movie than I did?
Well, as our good friend Shaq would say, this is some dry British-ass shit.
Except American.
Except it is American. What did I say earlier? Dry Yankee-ass shit.
Yep.
And For Bradley, and this is another reason why I often feel like an old man, I could easily pour myself a cup of tea, get some honey out. Real honey, not the little squeezable bear, you barbarians. Some you toast. Yeah, you. And yeah, just some toast, sip some tea, and be like every like 10 minutes when someone says something charming, like, splendid, you know, and it's it wasn't as long as I thought it would be, so that was also kind of pleasant.
It's about
an hour
40 minutes, so it's about average movie length, so.
The overall arc of these characters is, how can one be happy, but one also be true to themselves? And I'm like, what a journey. I'm one wonderful journey. I'm happy to watch you take it. And unfortunately, those journeys involve a lot of sitting and pondering. And I know that's incredibly boring to watch, but I really enjoy Elizabeth McGovern's performance in this. Haley Lou Richardson, I think, also was a riot. That must have been a huge challenge to, you know, be told you're playing this out of control girl who gets into quite the bit of trouble.
Oh, and you're but based on a famous actor and singer, too. So.
Yeah, but the trouble and her out of control behavior is saying that certain books are boring and asking questions to adults. Like, it's I not mean, exactly.
She does get very, very drunk in one scene, so.
Yeah, and even then, that was kind of like, calm down, everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, you know? Nothing, like, for being a riotous scene, supposedly, in this movie, not a whole lot happens because of it.
Right. I'm not sure if they, if this Louise character really was as notorious as, well, we just reviewed the Motley Crue movie. Definitely not that notorious.
No, this but, is the antithesis. If you wanted a come down from the dirt, this is the right movie for you. This is about as antithesis as the dirt as right. you can get.
But when she's all like, watch this, and she goes and sits down at a table of strangers she doesn't know and has a conversation, I had no idea that was a scandalous thing until, you know, the chaperone comes in and is like, what are you doing? You don't know these men. And I thought that was charming, you know?
Yeah, I feel like I've seen better movies. Like, I don't mind slow.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
Yeah, I don't mind slow movies. I'm okay with slow period pieces like this. I've seen some really good ones. I just felt like this movie didn't really offer anything new I hadn't seen before and not done nearly as well as those movies, even with the good performances here and there.
Yeah. And when you have a slow movie, it helps if you have, like, a master cinematographer and an amazing composer.
And this has neither.
Yeah, this was definitely the underdog of slow period pieces. And, yeah, just the last nitpick I really have that I think you mentioned it earlier, we both kind of agree with it. I don't understand why this movie that claims to be about Louise Brooks is actually about the chaperone, Norma. And I honestly wish that Louise Brooks wasn't even involved in this film, because I thought Norma's journey, since it focused on it so much, could have dealt with more time, so we could have got to know Joseph better, so he could have been more developed as a character, so we could have got to know her family back in Wichita, so we could have delved more into, like, the inner conflicts and struggle of being a good person, but also being happy. You know, it's like, I don't think she was lying to herself about wanting to be proper. But at the same time, you know, being proper so you could wear a mask and hide a secret you don't want people to know, that's depressing. And it only, like, scratches the surface of that. And that's kind of disappointing.
Well, and see, that's the thing, too, is that when that part happens where they make a big decision about, like, a major secret and that such...
Yeah.
The stuff leading to it didn't make any sense for the character. Like, up to that point, everything they established for Norma, the character that she's playing, didn't make sense why she would make certain decisions like that. Where I'm just like, I'm assuming the idea is that, you know, Luis is rubbing off on her kind of thing, but that never sold. It never felt like that she was actually having an impact because, you know, her character was written so staunchly as this very conservative lady. Mm-hmm. And by the time that she does go, like, well, maybe a little. I'm like, no. Why would you even think that? So I don't know. That's just me.
Yeah. Well, the best twists are foreshadowed. I know a lot of people don't like that, but they are. And this twist, this bombshell of a scandal that comes up It's literally out of nowhere. And
well, that scene is definitely out of nowhere, but I just meant the plot, especially the stuff with Joseph, where I'm just like, that stuff didn't make any sense why she would act that way with the way, like, everything else that's been established with the bombshell twist and everything with Luis. I'm just like, I don't buy it, movie. I'm sorry. Because also, again, like you said, this should have been one of two movies. It should have been a Luis Brooks movie and actually followed her story, or...
Which would have been a great story to see.
Oh, yeah. Actually. Or it should have been a movie all about Norma. That would have been more interesting. Like you said, it had more time to develop the characters.
Yeah,
more time to
I chose the Norma movie.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, like, clearly Julian Fellowes wants this to be the Norma movie because he clearly loves working with Elizabeth McGovern. But...
Oh, yeah.
It feels like he's obligated to cover all the other stuff from the book. And again... This is that problem that we had with like that movie The Kid, where it feels like this is historical fan fiction, where it's like, hey, we got this cool story written around a very famous person, but all of our original characters interact with them and see how they influence their lives. And it's just like, okay, you know what? How about you just write your own story? You know what? If Norma's story is so interesting, just focus on her. And that's just the problem, that the stuff involving her birth parents and the nunnery and that stuff, I couldn't give two craps about that plot line.
Aww.
I'm sorry, that plot line bored me to tears in this movie. It is just, and again, it's not like those stories can't be interesting. We've seen great movies like Philomena that do stuff like that. This movie just did it so badly.
Philomena's a masterpiece, though.
Yeah, well, maybe. I mean, masterpiece maybe.
You know, I'm not used to that. I'm not used to that, Justin. I'm not used to, like, looking up towards the sun and saying, this movie I just saw should be up there. You know, I think Philomena is one of the best movies in the past, what, decade?
Oh, I mean, I love Philomena, but that's the thing where I'm like, yeah, that's a great example of where you can get that same kind of story and make it really fascinating. This one...
Oh, I understand what you mean.
Yeah. You know, this one, it just felt like it was just kind of, you know? Like, and especially because it doesn't really go anywhere. That when that all is said and done, it's just kind of over before you know it, you know? So... I feel like I've talked more than I need to about this movie. I mean, and again, I know you probably like this more than I did, Brad, and I think I'm going to let you start off with your final thought for that. But I just, you know, again, it's one of those things where I don't really know why this was made for a movie. This really, I mean, this is clearly going to go on to PBS television sooner than later, so.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, before I say anything more, how about you start off? What did you think lead up to your final thoughts and rating?
Well, you see... Whenever a character has to interact with another character in a movie that's supposed to be historically accurate, there's certainly a lot of pits that they could all fall into. And I think they did fall into a couple of those pits, but I also think Elizabeth McGovern and Haley Lou Richardson did their damnedest to crawl out of them. I, much like this director, adore watching Elizabeth McGovern act. I will say, if you were not interested at all in her journey to find her parents, yikes, this must have been like a swamp walk for you.
And it like, was.
You know, like we're talking to Treyu pulling on his poor horse, like, I want to save you. And you were like, nah, just let me sink, man. Just end it. Anyways. But me, yeah, I think... This really inspired me to watch Downton Abbey again and really see if I can get past those the end of the Matthew arc, because I think Elizabeth McGovern's fantastic. It got me right in the heartstrings when, you know, her family arc came to fruition or to despair. You'll have to watch to find out. But I can see all the flaws in here as well. I was very upset about the Geza Roig. Not his performance, because he was fine. He was serviceable. Like, but at the same time, she could have been talking to a lamppost with a mustache taped to it. He was like kind of a nothing.
It could have been Nathan Lane doing a German accent. It would have been just as good. I don't know. It's just what you know. It's again, it's a thing where Geza Roig is just there. It's like it's nice to see him.
I don't think Nathan Lane could play it that dry. Come on, Norma. Let's make a decision here.
Again, it would have been more interesting. I would watch that movie now. Nathan Lane and Elizabeth McGovern acting against each other. That's awesome. The dude's going to play a hard-boiled cop in the new Penny Dreadful series. He can do drama.
You know, I think you're right. I'm kind of intrigued by this premise. How would Nathan Lane have done in this? So, you know, this really is like, I feel like this is going to sound like damning praise. If you enjoy just sitting and being quiet for a good 20 minutes, this movie's for you. You know, this movie will be for you. Personally, I will give it 6 very harsh criticisms towards a Nobel Peace Prize, 10 Nobel Peace Prize winning, sorry, 10 Pulitzer Prize winning novels.
Yeah, I can't even remember that sequence because I kind of just tuned it out at that point. But again, that was just the problem with this movie, is that I tried so hard and I waited for something to happen, but it came, like, I should have known from the trailer I saw in this movie for Breakfast Club that I couldn't tell what the conflict was in that movie. I mean, based on
that
the trailer.
That trailer is awful. Yeah, that trailer was freaking awful. But the problem is,
that trailer was also accurate. Because there's no conflict in this movie. There's barely any plot in this film. It's just scenes of watching these characters process their emotions. And there's some good moments here and there. You know, I will not say that there's nothing good in this movie. But there's just so few scenes that really work in this film. And I just, I don't know. Like, again, if you're like the people who like to sit around and wait, you know, go find a wall to watch, you know. It's just, I don't know why I'm so angry about this movie. I just feel like it's just such a waste of time, honestly. It's cute. It's inoffensive. It's exactly what it set out to be. And what it set out to be was just very unambitious. So, this is a no for me. So I'm going to give it 4 out of 10 awkward conversations about joining the Ku Klux Klan.
That was so random.
And that conversation never leads to anything in this movie either. It's just like, what?
Well, it was one of the retrospect things. It was one of those retrospect, I would never want to be a part of the Klan. Sure you wouldn't in that time period.
And then Spike Lee gets up and goes, well, you see, what they meant in this scene was talking about my movie, The Black Klansman.
Yeah, it was a promo. But I need to ask you one question here.
Yep.
How do you know about my watching wall?
Is that the space that you call where you previously put your TV? Yeah. Bradley doesn't actually watch the screeners, people. He just sits in front of the watching wall and it just projects the images for him.
Interesting. That paint looks more dry than yesterday.
It looks a lot more like Elizabeth the Governor every day, too. So.
Yeah.